Finally, she found it, a tiny thing, mewling and paddling weakly. It was the next thing to a baby, barely old enough to be out on its own. Ari took hold of a hanging brace and leaned out long across the water, one leg lifting up for balance while her other arm went out above her head. She stretched like a dancer. Her hand described a gentle arc and dipped into the pool, gently scooping the tiny draggled thing up. And it bit her. It sunk its teeth into the meaty bit between her finger and her thumb. Ari blinked and pulled herself back to the edge, cupping the small skunk gently in her hand. It struggled, and she was forced to grip it tighter than she liked. If it fell into the pool again, it might gasp and drown before she found and fetched it out. Once both her feet were back upon the stone, Ari made a cage for the tiny skunk with both her hands against her chest. With no hands left to hold her lamp, Ari trusted to the moonlight as she scurried up old ironways. It squirmed and scratched at her chest, fighting to be free, biting her a second time on the tip pad of her smallest finger. But by then she'd reached the nearest grate. She lifted up her hand and nudged the poor lost thing outside, out of the underthing and back toward its proper nighttime place of mothers, bins, and cobblestones. Ari made her way back to the bottom of the silver 12 and ducked her throbbing hand into the pool. It stung quite badly, but truthfully, it was her feelings that were worst hurt. It had been a mortal age since anything had been so rude to her. Her name hung dark and heavy in her chest as Ari dragged her dress on over her head. It didn't fit her properly today. It felt like everything was leering at her in the yellow light. Her hair was dreadful. Ari walked back to Mantle, taking the long way around to avoid Van so she wouldn't have to see herself in her mirror. Coming into port, she saw that nearly everything was wrong. Of course, it was just that sort of day. She set the lamp on the table harder than she needed to, making the flame jump high. Then she did her best to set the place to rights. Holly bottle close beside the folded secrets of the all-uncut octavo book? No. By itself on the farthest edge of second shelf. The resin wanted its own space. The brimful jar of dark blue laurel fruit moved back onto the corner table. The tiny stone figurine perched high upon the wine rack as if it were so much better than the rest of them. The only thing that kept its place was her new one perfect piece of honeycomb. She almost took a bite of it for no good reason other than to brighten up her day. She might have, too, selfish as that would be, but she couldn't bear the thought of touching it, given the state that she was in. When things were squared away as well as she could manage, Ari took the lamp and stepped through into Mantle. Her cedar box was in a state of minor disarray, and there were broken matches strewn about, but both of those were quickly mended. The brazen gear was fine, her perfect leaf, her box of stone, her ring of autumn gold, her gray glass bottle filled with lavender, all fine. She felt herself relax a bit. Then she saw her blanket. Her perfect blanket she had made herself in only the most proper way. It had twisted and the corner lay all naked on the floor. Ari merely stood there for a long moment. She thought that she might cry, but when she felt around inside herself, she found she had no crying left. She was full of broken glass and burrs. She was weary and disappointed with all of everything, and her hand hurt. But there was no crying left in her. So instead, she gathered up her blanket and carried it to Billows. After searching out a clean brass pipe, she hung it like a curtain in the center of the tunnel. Let the endless wind brush past, and watched it wicker gently back and forth. It billowed and luffed, but that was all. Ari frowned and moved to pull the blanket down again, but she was careless, and a puff of wind blew out her lamp. Relighting it cost her another precious match. Once Billows was full of flicker light again, Ari tugged the blanket down, turned it over, and hung it on the pipe again. But no, front ways or back ways, it didn't make a lick of difference. Next she climbed old iron ways and found the grate that loved the moon the most. Her pale light feathered down like snowdrops, like a silver spear. Ari spread the blanket out to catch the moon, to bask in it. It didn't help. She carried the blanket backward through the whole of Winnoway. She took it to the top of drafting, threw it off, and watched it plummet through the maze of wires until it snagged one near the bottom and hung there, bobbing gently up and down. She carried it back to mantle and wrapped it round the horrid, galling, stubborn, brazen gear that stood there, gloating and golden in the flickering light. None of it did a bit of good. Unable to think of anywhere else that might help ease the offense, Ari carried the blanket all the way down to Wayne's and into her new perfect sitting room. She draped it over the back of the couch. She folded it and set it in the chair. Finally, in true desperation, Ari set her jaw and spread her blanket flat across the lush red rug in the center of the room. She smoothed it with both hands, careful not to let it touch the stone of the floor. It overlapped the rug almost perfectly, and for a second she felt hope rise in her chest that... But no, it didn't fix things at all. She knew it then. She'd known all along, really. Nothing was going to make the blanket right again. Scowling, Ari snatched the blanket up, wadded the ungrateful thing into a ball, and headed up the unnamed stair. She felt flat and scraped as an old hide, dry as paper written on both sides. Even the playful teasing of the new stone stair could stir no breath of joy in her. She climbed over the debris, through the broken wall, and into Tumbrel. The room looked different in the yellow flickerling, full of looming fear and disappointment. And when her eyes passed over the vanity, she saw it differently. It was not rakish now. In the shifting light, she saw it had a sinister bent, and caught a glimpse of what was turning it from true. She could feel the tattered edges of its disarray. But tangle-haired and sticky, all unwashed and hollow as she was hardly in the proper state for mending. She was in no mood to tend to the ungrateful thing. Instead, Ari knelt before the wardrobe and set the spirit lamp beside her. Her knees were chilly on the stone floor as she pulled open the drawer and looked down at the creamy folded sheets inside. Ari closed her eyes. She took a long, stiff breath and sighed it out again. Eyes still closed, she stuffed the blanket hard into the drawer. Then she lay her hand upon the topmost sheet. Yes, this was fair. Even blind, she could sense the sweetness of it. Her fingers trailed across the creamy surface. She heard a tiny frizzling noise and caught the scent of burning hair. Ari sprang back, scrabbling madly backward on all fours, away from the vicious, spitting yellow flame. Catching hold of her hair, it was cold comfort to see only a few stray strands were charred. Ari stomped back to the wardrobe, snatched her blanket up, and slammed the drawer, too furious to even think of being properly polite. Then, climbing through the broken wall, Ari stubbed her toes against a jutting block of stone. She didn't drop her lamp, but it was a near thing. Instead, she merely cried in pain, staggering to catch her balance. Ari sat down hard upon the floor, clutching her foot. It was only then she realized she dropped her blanket. It was laying on the naked stone beside her. She grit her teeth so hard she feared that they would break. After a long moment, she gathered up her things, trudged back to port, and stuffed the blanket angrily into the wine rack, since that's where it belonged now, since that's the way things had to be. Ari spent a long time sitting in her thinking chair, glaring at the brazen gear. It was all glimmer and warm honey in the yellow light. She glared at it all the same, as if it were to blame, as if it were the one that had made a mess of everything. Eventually, her sulk burned out. Eventually, she calmed enough to realize the truth. You couldn't fight the tide or change the wind. And if there was a storm, well, a girl should batten down and bail, not run the rigging. How could she help but make a mess of things, the state that she was in? She'd strayed from the true way of things. First you set yourself to rights, and then your house, and then your corner of the sky, and after that... Well, she didn't rightly know what happened next, but she hoped that after that, the world would start to run itself a bit, like a gear watch, proper, fit, and kissed with oil. That was what she hoped would happen, because honestly, there were days she felt rubbed raw. She was so tired of being all herself, the only one that tended to the proper turning of the world. Still, it was sulk or sail, so Ari stood and rinsed her face and hands and feet. There was no soap, of course. It was no kind of proper wash. It didn't make her feel even a little better. But what else could she do? She brought the lamp to her lips and puffed out the yellow tongue of flame. Darkness flooded to fill the room, and Ari climbed into her narrow, naked bed. Ari lay in the dark for a long while. She was tired and tangled and hungry and hollow. She was weary in her heart and head, but even so, sleep would not come. She thought it was the loneliness at first, or the chill that kept her gritty-eyed and shifty. Perhaps it was the dull ache of her twice-bit hand. But no, those were no less than she deserved. They were not enough to keep her all wide-eyed at night. She'd learned to sleep with worse than that, back in the times before he'd come, back in the years before she had her sweet new perfect name. No, she knew what the problem was. She slid out of her bed and brought out one of her few matches. It struck on the first try, and Ari smiled white in the red light of its sulfurous flaring. She lit the spirit lamp and carried it to port. Guiltily, she removed her blanket from the wine rack where she'd stuffed it. She smoothed it gently out across the table, murmuring an apology. And she was sorry. She knew better. Cruelty never helped the turning of the world. She folded the blanket carefully then, her hands gentle. She matched the corners and kept it square and true. Then she found the proper place for it upon the bookshelf, and brought the smooth gray stone so that it wouldn't want for company. It would be cold at night, and she would miss it, but it was happy there. Didn't it deserve to be happy? Didn't everything deserve its proper place? Still, she cried a bit as she tucked the blanket in, settling it on the shelf. Ari made her way back into Mantle and sat on her bed. Then she went back to port to make sure her crying hadn't skewed things all about. But no, she brushed the blanket with her hands, comforting. It was as it should be. It was happy. Back in Mantle, Ari moved about the bare room, making sure everything was as it should be. Her thinking chair was just so. Her cedar box was flush against the wall. Foxen's dish and dropper jar were resting on the bedshelf. The brazen gear sat in its niche, indifferent to the world. The fireplace was empty, clean and trim. Her bedside table held her tiny silver cup. Above the fireplace on the mantelpiece sat her perfect yellow leaf, her small, strong box of stone, her gray glass jar with kind, dried lavender inside, her ring of sweet, warm autumn gold. Ari touched each of these, making sure of them. They were everything they ought to be and nothing else. They were fine as fine. Despite all of this, she felt unsettled, here, in her most perfect place. Ari hurried down to Burrow, brought back a broom, and set to sweeping Mantle's floor. It took an hour, not because of any mess, but Ari swept slowly and carefully, and there was quite a lot of floor. She didn't often think of it, as Mantle hardly needed tending anymore, but it was a big place. It was hers, and the place loved her. And she fit here like a pea in her own perfect pod. But even so, there was a lot of empty floor. The floor all fresh, Ari returned the broom. On her way back, she wandered through port to check on the blanket. It seemed to be doing well, but she brought the holly bottle over to keep it company, too, just in case. It was a terrible thing to be lonely. She stepped back into mantle again and set the spirit lamp on her table. She took her 3 remaining matches out of her pocket and put them on the table, too. As she sat on the edge of her bed, Ari realized what was out of place. She was herself in disarray. She'd seen something in Tumbril and not tended to it. Ari thought of the 3 mirrored vanity, and a tickling finger of guilt ran itself along the edge of her heart. Even so, she was tired down in her bones now, weary and hurt. Perhaps just this once... Ari frowned and shook her head furiously. She was a wicked thing sometimes, all full of want, as if the shape of the world depended on her mood, as if she were important. So she stood and made her slow way back to Tumbril, down Crumbledon, through Wayne's, through Circle Perfect Annulet, and up the unnamed stair. After climbing through the broken wall, Ari looked hard at the vanity in the flickering light. As she did, she could feel her heart rise slightly in her chest. The shifting light against 3 mirrors, it made countless shadows dance across the bottles there. Stepping closer, Ari watched carefully. She would never have seen this properly without the shifting nature of the yellow light. She stepped left, then right, looking at things from both sides. She tilted her head. She went to her knees so that her eyes were level with the surface of the vanity. A sudden, sunny smile spilled all across her face. Back straight, Ari sat on the edge of the chair in front of the vanity. She tried not to look in the mirrors, knowing how she must appear. An unwashed, red-eyed, tangled mess, too thin, too pale. She was no kind of lady. She opened the 2 drawers instead and stared into them for a moment, letting the yellow light and shadows slide around inside. After several minutes, Ari nodded to herself. She removed the pair of gloves from the right-hand drawer and set them near the mirror by a pot of rouge. Then Ari pulled the right-hand drawer completely free and switched it with its partner on the left. She sat there for a long moment, moving the 2 drawers back and forth in their new tracks, a look of intent concentration on her face. Everything atop was disarray, bottles and baubles strewn about. Despite that, nearly everything was just the way it ought to be. The only exception was the hairbrush, which Ari tucked into the left-hand drawer by the handkerchiefs, and a small golden brooch with 2 birds in flight, which she hid beneath a folded fan. After that, the only thing out of place was a delicate blue bottle with a twisted silver stopper. Like many of the other bottles, it was laying on its side. Ari set it upright, but that wasn't right. She tried to tuck it in a drawer, but it didn't fit there either. She picked it up, listening to the liquid tinkling inside. She looked around the room uncertainly. She opened the vanity's drawers again, then slid them closed again. There didn't seem to be a place for it. She shook the bottle idly in her hand and tapped it with her fingernail. The pale blue glass was delicate as eggshell, but dusty. She gave the bottle a good polishing, hoping it might be a little more forthcoming. When it was clean, it gleamed like the heart of some forgotten icy god. Turning it over in her hands, she saw tiny letters etched across the bottom of the glass. They read, "For my intoxicating Esther." Ari put her hand across her mouth, but a muffled giggle still escaped. Moving slowly, her expression thick with disbelief, she unscrewed the stopper and took a sniff. She laughed openly then, hugely, from deep in her belly. She laughed so hard she could barely screw the top back on. She was still chuckling a minute later as she tucked the bottle deep into her pocket. She was still smiling when she made her careful way down the unnamed stair and put the bottle carefully away in port. It liked the bookshelf best, and that was doubly good, as there it would keep both holly bottle and the blanket company. Ari was still smiling when she climbed into her tiny, perfect bed. And yes, it was cold, and lonely too, but that could not be helped. She knew better than anyone it was worth doing things the proper way. Ash and Ember. When Ari woke on the fifth day, Foxen was quite recovered from his mood. That was for the best. She had a busy lot of work to do. Laying in the dark, she wondered what the day would bring. Some days were trumpet-proud. They heralded like thunder. Some were courteous, careful as a lettered card upon a silver plate. But some days were shy. They did not name themselves. They waited for a careful girl to find them. This was such a day too shy to knock upon her door. Was it a calling day, a sending day, a making day, a mending day? She could not tell. As soon as Foxen was sufficiently unslumbrous, Ari went to taps and fetched fresh water for her basin. Then, back in mantle, she rinsed her face and hands and feet. There was no soap, of course. That was the very first of things that she would set to rights today. She was not vain enough to work her will against the world, but she could use the things the world had given her. Enough for soap. That was allowed. That was within her rights. First she lit her spirit lamp. With Foxen's sweet cerulean to soften it, the yellow flame helped warm the room without filling it with frantic shadows clawing at the walls, all jerk and judder. Ari opened up the flue and set a careful fire with her newfound tanglewood, so fine and dry, all ash and elm and spry hawthorn. She soon set it crackling to life. She eyed it for a moment, then turned away. It would be burning for some time. It was just as Master Mandrag always said, 9/10 of chemistry was waiting. But she had work enough to fill the time. First she ventured down to tree. She fetched the small copper kettle and her cracked clay cup. She pocketed the empty linen sack. She eyed the butter in the well, then frowned at it and shook her head, knowing better than to borrow trouble with the knives it held. She lifted out the hard white lump of suet instead, sniffed it curiously and grinned. Then she gathered up the tiny tripod, all of iron. She took her sack of salt. She was just about to leave when she paused and eyed the silver bowl of nutmeg seeds, so strange and rare, so full of faraway. She picked one up and ran her fingertips along its tippled skin. She brought it to her face and breathed in deep, musk and thistle, a smell like a bordello curtain, deep and red and full of mysteries. Still uncertain, Ari closed her eyes and bent her head. The pink tip of her tongue flicked shyly out to touch the strange brown pitum. She stood there, still as still. Then, eyes closed, she brushed the smooth side of it soft across her lips. It was a tender, thoughtful motion. It was nothing like a kiss. After a long moment, Ari's mouth spread into a wide, delighted smile. Her eyes went wide as lamps. Yes, yes, yes. It was the very thing. The leaf-etched silver bowl was heavy, so Ari made a special trip and carried it two-handed back to mantle. Next, she fetched the large stone mortar where it hunkered down, all lurksome and dark house. She went to Clink's and brought two bottles back. She searched the floor of Tenors till she found a scattering of dry pine needles. She brought these back to mantle too and placed them at the bottom of the cracked clay cup. By then the fire had faded into ashes. She swept them up. She placed them in the cracked clay cup and packed them tight. She went to rinse her sooty hands. She rinsed her face and feet. Ari set another fire and kindled it. She put the suet in the kettle. She hung the kettle by the fire to melt. She added salt. She grinned. She went down to tree again and brought back the acorn she had gathered and a wide, flat pan. She shelled the nuts and toasted them, jiggling them about in the pan. She sprinkled them with salt and ate them, each by each. Some were bitter, some were sweet, some were hardly anything. That was just the way of things. After she'd eaten them all, she eyed the suet and saw it wasn't finished, not by half. So one by one she cracked the nutmeg seeds. She ground them in the old stone mortar. She ground them fine as dust and poured the dust into a jar. Crack and grind, crack and grind. The mortar was a grim thing, thuggish and terse. But after 2 days without a proper wash, Ari found it perfect suited to her mood. When she was finished grinding, Ari pulled the copper pot of melted suet off the fire. She stirred. She sieved the dottle off till there was nothing left but hot, sharp tallow. She set the copper pot aside to cool. She went to fetch fresh water from the proper copper pipe in Pickering. She filled the spirit lamp from a bright steel tap tucked tidily away in Burrow. When she returned, the fire had died again. She swept the ashes up and pressed them down into the cracked clay cup. She rinsed her sooty hands, she rinsed her face and feet. She lit the fire a third and final time, then Ari went to port and eyed her shelves. She brought the bottle of esters and set it near the fireplace with her tools. She brought the holly cloth. Next she carried in the jar of dark blue laurel fruit, but much to her chagrin, it wouldn't fit. No matter how she tried, the jar of laurel simply wouldn't let itself be settled with her tools, not even when she offered it the mantelpiece. Ari felt unfairly vexed. The laurel would have been ideal. She'd thought of it as soon as she'd awoke and thought of soap. It would have fit like hand into a hand. She'd planned to mingle, but no, there was no place for it. That much was clear. The stubborn thing would simply not be reasoned with. It exasperated her, but she knew better than to force the world to bend to her desire. Her name was like an echo of an ache in her. She was unwashed and tangle-haired. It would be nothing but pure folly. She sighed and brought the jar of dark blue fruit back to its shelf in port where it sat, self-centered and content. Then Ari sat upon the warm, smooth stones of mantle. She sat before the fireplace, her makeshift tools laid out around her. The ashes in the cracked clay cup were just as they should be, fine and soft. Oak would have made them too intractable. Birch was bitter, but this was a perfect mix. Ash and elm and hawthorn, they made a medley without melding or meddling. The ash was proud but not unseemly. The elm was graceful, but not inappropriately apetalous, especially for her. And the hawthorn, well, Ari blushed a bit at that. Suffice to say that, apetalous or no, she was still a healthy young lady, and there was such a thing as too much decorum. Next she brought out the bottle of esters. They were terribly coy, full of stolen moments and the scent of Celis flower. Perfect. Thieving was precisely what she needed here. The nutmeg was foreign, and something of a stranger. It was brimful of sea foam, a lovely addition, essential. They were cipher and a mystery, but that was not particularly troublesome to her. She understood some secrets must be kept. She peered into the cooling pot and saw the tallow starting to congeal. It hugged the kettle's edge, making a slender crescent like the moon. She grinned. Of course. She had found it underneath the moon. It would follow the moon, waxing full. But looking closer, Ari's smile faded. The suet was clean and strong, but there were no apples in it anymore. Now it was brimming full of age and anger. It was a thunderstorm of rage. That wouldn't do at all. She could hardly lave herself with rage day after day. And with no laurel to keep it at bay, well, she would simply have to draw the anger out. If not, her soap was worse than ruined. Ari went back into port and looked around. It was a fairly simple choice. She lifted up the honeycomb and took a single bite. She closed her eyes and felt herself go all goose-prickle from the sweetness of it. She could not help but giggle as she licked it off her lips, almost dizzy from the work of bees inside her. After she had sucked all of the sweetness from it, Ari delicately spat the lump of beeswax out into her palm. she rolled it in her hands until it made a soft, round bead. She gathered up the tallow pot and made her way to Umbriel. The moon was motherly here, peering kindly through the grate. The gentle light feathered slantways down to kiss the stone floor of the underthing. Ari sat beside the circle of silver light and gently set the kettle in the center of it. The cooling tallow now formed a thin white ring around the inside of the copper kettle. Ari nodded to herself. Three circles, perfect for asking. It was better to be gentle and polite. It was the worst sort of selfishness to force yourself upon the world. Ari tied the bead of beeswax to a thread and dipped it in the center of the still hot tallow. After several moments, she relaxed to see it working like a charm. She felt the rage congealing, gathering around the wax, heading to it like a bear on hunt for honey. By the time the circle of moonlight had left the copper pot behind, every bit of anger had been leached out of the tallow. As neat a factoring as ever hand of man had managed. Then Ari took the kettle off the tree and set it in the moving water of the chill well. Cricket quick, the tallow cooled to form a flat white disc 2 fingers thick. Ari carefully lifted the disc of tallow off the surface and poured the golden water underneath away, noting idly that it held a hint of sleep and all the apples too. That was a pity. But it could not be helped. Such was the way of things sometimes. The bead of wax was seething. Now that the anger had been factored free, Ari realized it was much fiercer stuff than she had thought. It was fury, thunderous with untimely death. It was a mother's rage for cubs now left alone. Ari was glad the bead already dangled from her thread. She would be loath to touch it with her hands. Slow and quiet, Ari tucked the bead into a thick glass jar and sealed it with a tight, tight lid. This she carried off to Boundary. Oh, so careful she carried it. Oh, so careful she placed it on a high stone shelf behind the glass. It would be safest there. In Mantle, Ari's third and final fire had fallen into ash. She swept it up again. These ashes filled the cracked clay cup to brimming. She rinsed her sooty hands. She rinsed her face and feet. All was ready. Ari grinned and sat down on the warm stone floor with all her tools arrayed around her. On the outside she was all composed, but inside she was fairly dancing at the thought of her new soap. She set the kettle on the iron tripod. Underneath she slid the spirit lamp so that the hot, bright flame could kiss the copper bottom of the kettle. First there was her perfect disc of clean white tallow. It was strong and sharp and lovely as the moon. Part of her, some wicked, restless piece, wanted to break the disc to bits so it would melt the faster, so she could have her soap the sooner, so she could wash herself and brush her hair and finally set herself to rights after so long. But no. She set the tallow gently in the kettle, careful not to give offense. She left it in its pure and perfect circle. Patience and propriety, it was the only graceful thing to do. Next came the ashes. She set the cracked clay cup atop a squat glass jar. She poured the clear, clean water over them. It filtered through the ash and drip-tick-trickled through the crack in the cup's bottom. It was the smoky red of blood and mud and honey. When the final drips had fallen, Ari held the jar of cinder wash aloft and saw it was as fine as any she had ever made. It was a sunset dusky red, stately and graceful. It was a changing thing. But underneath it all, the liquid held a blush of wantonness. It held all the proper things the wood had brought, and many caustic lies besides. In some ways this would be enough. The tallow and the cinder wash would make a serviceable soap. But there would be no apples in it, nothing sweet or kind. It would be hard and chill as chalk. It would resemble bathing with an indifferent brick. So yes, in some ways these would be enough for soap. But how awful would that be? How terrible to live surrounded by the stark, sharp hollowness of things that simply were enough. Sitting on the warm, smooth floor of Mantel, Ari shivered at the thought of moving through a joyless world like that. Nothing perfect, nothing beautiful and true. Oh no, she was too wise to live that way. Ari looked around and smiled at all her luxury. She had a perfect loving leaf and lavender. She wore her favorite dress. Her name was Ari, and it was a shining piece of gold inside her all the time. So she twisted off the silver stopper from the ice-blue jar and poured the perfume in among the well-ground nutmeg powder. The smell of Celis flower filled the room, so sweet and light against the prickle sting of nutmeg. Ari smiled and stirred the two together with a kindling stick, then poured the thick, wet, pulpy mass into the linen sack she'd set inside a wide-mouthed jar. She used two sticks to twist the ends of the sack, and her makeshift wringer squeezed the fabric tight until it oozed a thick, dark, oily liquid that spattered down into the jar. It was barely a slow trickle, just a spoonful of the liquid, two spoonfuls, three. She turned the sticks, her mouth a line of concentration. The linen twisted tighter. The dark liquid welled up, gathered, dripped, dripped again. Despite herself, Ari wished she had a proper press. It was so wasteful otherwise. She strained against the sticks, shifting her grip and giving them another half a turn. She grit her teeth, her knuckles going white. Another drip. Three more. 10. Ari's arms began to tremble, and despite herself, she glanced towards the iron-bound door that led to Boundary. She looked away. She was a wicked thing, but she was not so bad as that. Idle wishing was mere fancy. It was another thing entirely to bend the world towards her own desires. Finally, her shaking arms could bear no more. She sighed, relaxed, and pulled the sticks free, upending the linen sack into a shallow pan. No longer a dark, pulpy mass, the nutmeg pomace now looked pale and crumbly. Ari lifted up the glass and eyed the viscous liquid, clear as amber. It was lovely, lovely, lovely. It was like nothing that she'd ever seen before. It was thick with secrets and seafoam. It was prickle-rich with mystery. It was full of musk and whispers and tetradecanoic acid. It was so fine a thing she dearly wished for more of it. The jar hardly held a palmful. She glanced over at the pan and thought of squeezing out the pomace with her hands to gather up a few more precious drops. But reaching out, Ari found that she was oddly loath to touch the gritty mass with her own naked skin. She paused and tipped her head to look more closely at the pale, gray, crumbling pomace, and her stomach pulled into a knot at what she saw. It was full of screaming, days of endless dark red screaming. It had been hidden by the mysteries before, but now the Celis sweet had stolen those away, and Ari saw the screaming clear as day. Ari lifted up the jar and eyed the amber bine. But no, it was just as she had seen before. There was no screaming hidden there among the mysteries and musk. It was still a perfect thing. Ari drew a long and shaky breath at that, and setting down the jar, she gently lay the linen sack and both her twisting sticks inside the shallow tin pan beside the horrid pomace. She handled them as little as she could, with nothing but her fingertips, as if they had been poisoned. She did not want it near her. No bit of it. She knew already. She knew of red. She'd had enough of screaming. Sweating slightly, Ari lifted up the pan with both her hands and turned to face the doorway. Then she stopped before she took a single step toward well-ordered port. She could not keep this there. Who knew what chaos it would bring? Screaming was no kind of kindly neighbor. Ari turned toward the hallway then. She took a step, then stopped, not knowing where she'd go. To billows where the wind would carry screaming all throughout the underthing? To tree where it would smolder like a coal, so near her pots and pans and precious peas? But no, no, no. So Ari turned a final time. She turned to face the third way out of Mantle. She turned toward the iron-bound door and brought the linen bag to Boundary. Returning, Ari rinsed her face. She rinsed her hands and feet. She took one step toward the tripod and the copper pot, then stopped. She went back to her basin. She rinsed her face. She rinsed her hands and feet. More than anything, she wanted soap, to sit and finish what she had begun. She was so close. But first she stepped off hurriedly to port, to make herself quite sure of things. She smoothed the blanket with both hands. She touched the flat gray stone. She moved the holly bottle back where it belonged. She touched the leather book, then opened up the cover to make sure certain its pages were still all uncut. They were. But glancing back toward the shelf, she saw the stone had gone all out of joint. She tried to slide it back to proper true, but couldn't see the shape of it, and couldn't tell the way of things, and if it was a place where it was right. The honey, too. She wanted honey, but she mustn't. She rubbed her eyes, then forced herself to stop and look down at her hands. She hurried back to Mantle. She rinsed her face. She rinsed her hands and feet. She felt the panic rising in her then. She knew how quickly things could break. You did the things you could. You tended to the world for the world's sake. You hoped you would be safe, but still she knew. It could come crashing down, and there was nothing you could do. And yes, she knew she wasn't right. She knew her everything was canted wrong. She knew her head was all unkilter. She knew she wasn't true inside. She knew. Her breath was coming harder now, her heart a hammer in her chest. The light was brighter, and she heard the sound of things that normally she couldn't hear. A keening of the world all out of place, a howl of everything all turned from true. Ari looked around the room, all startled sweat and fear. She was tangle and cut string, even here. She could see traces. Mantle was all eggshell, even her most perfect place. Her bed was almost not her bed. Her perfect leaf so frail, her box of stone so far away, her lavender no help at all and growing pale. She looked down at her shaking hands. Was she all full of screaming now? Again? No, 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 no. It wasn't her, not just. It was all everything unraveling and thin and tatter. She could not even stand. The light was jagged, scraping like a knife against her teeth, and underneath it was the hollow dark. The nameless, empty everything was clawing at the fraying edges of the walls. Even Foxen wasn't even nearly. The stones were strange, the air. She went looking for her name and couldn't even find it flickering. She was just hollow in. Everything was. Everything was everything. Everything was everything else. Even here in her most perfect place, she needed, please, she needed, please. But there, against the wall, she saw the brazen gear was all unchanged. It was too full of love. Nothing could shift it. Nothing could turn it from itself. When all the world was palimpsest, it was a perfect palindrome, inviolate. It was all the way across the room. So far she feared she could not reach it. Not with the stones below her gone so rough, not hollow as she was. But when she moved a bit, she saw it was not hard at all. It was downhill. The proud, bright, brazen gear was true enough. It pressed down hard against the thin, frayed, tatter world and made a dent. Then she was touching it. It was so smooth and warm along its face. And all a sweat, breathless, desperate, Ari pressed her forehead up against its cool. She took hold of it with both her hands. The sharpness of its edges on her palms was like a calming knife. She clung to it at first, like someone in a shipwreck grips the stone of shore. But all the world around her was still storm, all tumble down, all crumble pale and ache. And so, with shaking arms, she strained against it. She pulled to turn the gear upon its narrow ledge of rock. She spun it widdershins, the breaking way. It tipped from tooth to tooth. She spun the brazen gear, and only then did Ari understand the fearsome weight of it. It was a fulcrum thing. It was a pin, a pivot. It shifted, tilted, but truthfully it only seemed to turn. In truth, it stayed. It stayed. In truth, the whole world spun. One final weighty tip, and now the space left by the missing tooth was turned straight down. And as the edges of the gear grit hard into the stone, Ari felt the whole world jar around her. It ticked, clicked, fit, fixed. Trembling, she looked around and saw that everything was fine. Her bed was just her bed, all of everything in mantle, fine. Nothing was nothing else. Nothing was anything it shouldn't be. Ari sat down hard upon the floor. So sudden full of sweet relief, she gasped. She laughed and gathered up the gear and held it to her chest. She kissed it. She closed her eyes and wept. All to her desire. Setting Fulcrum back upon his narrow ledge, Ari wiped her smudgy tears away from his sweet brazen face. Then she walked over to the kettle and was pleased to see the tallow was all melted. It smelled of hot, of hearth, of earth, of breath. She bent and puffed the yellow flame away. Then to her basin. Ari rinsed her face. She rinsed her hands and feet. She sat herself beside the kettle on the warm stone floor. Soon now, close. She grinned, and for the space of one long breath, she almost didn't mind how tangle-haired and smudged she had become. Ari stirred the tallow with a slender stick. She drew a calming breath. She took the jar of cinder wash and poured it slowly in among the tallow. The mix went cloudy all at once, white tinged with just a hint of pink. She grinned her proudest grin and stirred again. She gathered up the amber bine, all prickling quick and petal kind. She poured it in the kettle too, and all the room was filled with musk and mystery and bear. She stirred and cellus filled the air. Her face intent, once more she stirred, once more. She felt the mix grow thick. She stopped and set aside the slender stick. She took a breath and let it out. She went and rinsed her face and hands and feet. Two by two, she gathered up her tools and took them back where they belonged. Back to tree and port and clinks, she carried bottles, lamps, and pans. When all of this was done, Ari took the now cool copper pot and carried it to port. She tipped the kettle, reached inside, and lifted out a smooth, curved dome of pale, sweet soap. She used the flat edge of the petal plate to slice the dome of soap. She cut it into cakes, each one a different size, a different shape, each to each, and all to her desire. It felt wicked and delicious. But given that the soap was hers, this tiny willfulness could do no harm. She indulged herself from time to time. It helped remind her she was truly free. As she worked, Ari saw the soap was not true white. It was the palest pink, the color of fresh cream with just a single drop of blood. Ari lifted up a cake, and moving oh so careful, she brought it to her face and touched it lightly with her tongue. She grinned at its perfection. It was kissing soap, soft but firm, mysterious but sweet, There was nothing like it in all Temerant. Nothing below the earth or underneath the sky. Ari couldn't wait a moment more. She skipped off to her basin. She washed her face and hands and feet. She laughed. She laughed so sweet and loud and long it sounded like a bell, a harp, a song. She went to Clink's. She washed herself. She brushed her hair. She laughed and leapt. She hurried home. She went to bed. And all alone, she smiled and slept. The Graceful Way to Move. The sixth day, Ari woke, her name unfurling like a flower in her heart. Foxen felt it too, and fairly burst with light when she first wedded him. It was a waxing day, a day for making. She laughed at that before she even left her bed. The day had come too late, but she could hardly care. Her soap was sweet as any ever was. Besides, there was a dignity to doing things in your own time. But that thought sobered her somewhat. His visit would not wait. He would be here soon, tomorrow. And she still had nothing good enough to share. She had no perfect gift to give. There were three ways out of Mantle. But no. She washed her face and hands and feet. She brushed her hair until it was a golden cloud. She took a drink and donned her favorite dress. She didn't dally. Today was going to be a busy day. First came the disposition of her new and perfect soap. She had made 7 cakes. One was by her basin, safe in Mantle. One she'd washed with yesterday in Clink's. The largest 4 she carried off to bakery to cure. The smallest, sweetest one she tucked into the bottom of her cedar box so she would never have to go without again. That was a lesson firmly learned. Oh, yes. She paused, one hand inside her cedar box. Would he like a cake of kissing soap? It was quite fine. He never would have seen its like before. But no, she flushed before she'd even finished thinking it. It would be altogether too improper. Besides, it was not right for him. The mysteries might fit, but he had much of oak about him, willow too, and he was absolutely not a cellous sort. She shut the lid of her sweet cedar box, but getting to her feet, Ari felt the room go bright and tip around her. Staggering, she took 2 steps and sat down on the bed before she fell. She felt the fear rise up in her. Her eyes darted around the room, all startlement. Was this? No. This was a simpler thing. Her stomach was an empty drum again. She had forgot to tend herself. So when her head stopped spinning, it was off to tree. But on a whim, for company, she brought along Brash Fulcrum. He had seen so little of the underthing. And heavy as he was, it really was the least that she could do for all his help. Pans were nearly all the fruit the tree could offer up, but only nearly. She brought out a tin pot and filled it with fresh water. She lit the spirit lamp with her penultimate match. Then she climbed onto the counter and reached with both hands to fetch down her jar. The dried peas rolled inside, tinkling playfully against the glass. She worked the baling top and poured peas into her tiny hand until they filled her cupped palm. Her hand was not that large. It was not so very many peas, but it was half of what she had. She tipped them into the pot where they plinked into the warming water. Then, after a moment's hesitation, Ari shrugged and poured the other half into the pot as well. She set the empty bottle on the countertop and looked around. The burner's flicker light and Foxen's green-blue glow both showed the bareness of the shelves. She sighed and put it from her mind. Today there would be soup. Tomorrow he would visit. And after that... Well, after that she would do her best. That was the only way. You did not want things for yourself. That made you small. That kept you safe. That meant you could move smoothly through the world without upsetting every apple cart you came across. And if you were careful, if you were a proper part of things, then you could help. You mended what was cracked. You tended to the things you found askew. And you trusted that the world in turn would brush you up against the chance to eat. It was the only graceful way to move. All else was vanity and pride. Could she bring the honeycomb to share with him tomorrow? It was the loveliest of things. He had too little sweetness in his life. That was the truth. She thought on this while boiling bubbles danced her peas about the pot. Ari idly stroked brash Fulcrum's face, and after a long while of musing she decided, yes, the honeycomb might work if nothing else presented. She stirred the soup a bit and added salt. She wished the butter wasn't full of knives. A little fat in this would be a true delight. A little fat would suit it to a T. After her lovely soup, Ari headed back to Mantle. With Fulcrum keeping company, she could hardly make her way through Vaults or Veneret, so she took the long way round and went by way of Pickering instead. Belly warm, and with a guest besides, she took her time along the close-fit square stone tunnels. She was nearly back to Doughton, Fulcrum heavy in her arms, when she felt a gentle crickling underfoot and stopped. Looking down, she saw a scattering of leaves upon the floor. It didn't make a bit of sense to find them here. There was no wind in Pickering, no water here. She looked around, but couldn't see a speckle of bird dropping. She sniffed the air, but didn't smell a hint of musk or piss. But there was nothing threatening either, nothing knotted up about this place, no skew or wrongness here, but not nothing neither. It was half a thing, a mystery. Curious, Ari set Fulcrum gently down upon the floor and lifted up the leaf. It looked familiar. She hunted round and found a handful of them scattered near an open doorway. She picked these up, and when they wrangled up together in her hand, she understood. Excited, she took Fulcrum back to Mantle. Before she left, she kissed his face and set him comfortably to rights upon his stony ledge, gap down, of course. Then she skipped to port and lifted up the silver bowl. She held the crickling leaf she carried up against the twining leaves engraved around the edge. It was the same. She shook her head, unsure of what they might portend. Still, there was only one way to tell. Taking up the silver bowl, Ari scurried back to Pickering, then through the doorway where she'd found the clustered leaves, over a stone tumble, around a fallen beam. She did not know if she had ever been to this piece of Pickering before, but it was still simplicity itself to find her way. Here and there, a leaf or two would dot the floor like breadcrumbs. Finally, she came to the bottom of a narrow shaft that led straight up. An ancient chimney from the days before? A tunnel for escape? A well? It was narrow and steep, but Ari was a tiny thing. And even carrying the silver bowl, she climbed it quickly as a squirrel. At the top, she found a plank of wood already partially askew. She pushed it easily aside and clambered out into a basement room. The room was dusty and disused, full of shelves. Barrels stacked in corners, shelves jammed full with bundles, kegs, and crates. In among the smell of dust, she caught a whiff of street and sweat and grass. Looking round, she saw a window high up in the wall, and on the floor below some broken glass. It was a tidy place, save for a scattering of leaves blown down in some forgotten storm. There were sacks of corn and barley flour, winter apples, waxed packages stuffed tight with figs and dates. Ari walked around the room, her hands behind her back. She stepped lightly as a dancer on a drum. Kegs of molasses, jars of strawberry preserve. Some squash had tumbled from their burlap bundle just beside the door. She shooed them back inside and pulled the drawstring tight. Eventually she bent to look more closely at a lower shelf. A single leaf had come to rest atop a small clay crock. Moving carefully, she lifted up the leaf, removed the crock, and put the silver bowl down in its place. She lay the leaf back down inside the bowl. She allowed herself a single longing look around the room, no more. Then Ari headed back the way she came. Only back in the familiar dark of Pickering did she draw an easy breath. Then eagerly she brushed the dust from her new treasure. If the picture was to be believed,